All right, hi. And Merry Christmas to Stephen and Nancy. We're here for Consciousness and the Absolute, the final talks with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And last time we were in a message already, and we didn't get to finish it. So I'm going to begin at the top of page 35. If the body does not remain, consciousness will not remain. In the absence of the body and consciousness, what are you? So that's the question Nisargadatta Maharaj is asking. Maharaj is asking the questioner a question. So he's asking the questioner, if the body doesn't remain, consciousness doesn't remain. That's what he's telling him first, that in order to have consciousness, you have to have a body. And so he's saying, if there is no body and there is no consciousness, what are you? That's just a good question to contemplate. If there is no body and there is no consciousness, what are you? You know, the ego wants to say that would be death. No body, no consciousness, death. I got to tell you, the heart of my contemplations lately in the seven steps to awakening are contemplating this this eternal nature, which is beyond human and is the source of everything. You know, the Tao Te Ching calls it the Tao. But I've been contemplating this eternal nature very deeply. And when I contemplate this eternal nature, what I get to, even though you can tell it's even hard to say, you know, resistance doesn't like this stuff. It's kind of interesting, right? I know what I want to say. I can't get the words out of my mouth. When I contemplate this eternal nature, what is obvious to me is that it is beyond human and it is beyond consciousness. That is the nature of eternal nature. That is the nature of that which is the source of all things. And, you know, when we start this spiritual path, at least when I started this spiritual path, and I think many of us are the same, we think of ourselves as a person, and we think of ourselves as God, really, as a person too, in a way, a spirit person, but a person. And we think of ourselves as separate from God. And eventually, we come to realize that we are the consciousness that is God, or that we thought of as God, that which creates. And we come to see that as the truth for a long time. But then eventually, we come to realize that that also had a source. And that source is the, I think the absolute is a perfect word. That source is the absolute truth. And at least in my case, when I first began to realize that source of the as the absolute truth, I still thought of myself as separate from it. You know, I no longer thought of a God person, a spirit person. But I could see there was this dark, mysterious force that is the source. And somehow it was still out there, you know, not me. But lately in my contemplations, I'm starting to see myself as it. And this brings a peace that I can't explain. In it, there's an absolute realization that this experience of being a person is temporary. That this experience of being a person is going to end. And that the experience that I think of as life, you know, this consciousness experience, this human consciousness experience that I think of as life, is also going to end. But that what I am couldn't possibly end. And there's this deep peace in that. You know, it doesn't even make sense as I explain it. You know, it seems like there should be some kind of a sadness that this experience that I know of is going to end. But there's not a sadness. And I think the reason there's not a sadness is because it's so obviously the truth. It's so obviously the truth that this experience is going to end, and it's so obviously the truth that I am the eternal source, and that as the eternal source, I can't ever end. And it's funny because I couldn't even tell you what the eternal source is. But I can tell you that I know it to be absolutely true. And I can tell you that I'm incredibly, deeply grateful for it. As a person, at having this experience as a person, I feel honored. To be it, the source. Very hard to explain how grateful I know, how grateful I feel to be contemplating myself as the source. Let's just return to the reading. If the body does not remain, consciousness will not remain. In the absence of body and consciousness, what are you? Of course, the answer would be the source. But the questioner says, I don't know. Nisargadatta says, now you want to get some benefit, some advantage for yourself. To whom is the benefit? The questioner answers, consciousness. Nisargadatta says, if you are not the body or the consciousness, then what are you? What are you? When you realize the self-knowledge, then the self is released, liberated. Maybe that's the piece I'm describing. I don't know. When you realize the self-knowledge, then the self is released, liberated. Then what? The questioner asks. Then you know definitely who you are. That by which you know that also. The questioner says, is that liberation? Nisargadatta says, liberation means what? It is no more there. And then it says, he's flicking his cigarette lighter on and off. So he's showing a flame, and then the flame goes out. Flame, and the flame goes out. The cigarette lighter is the body. The consciousness is the flame. Now it isn't there anymore. It is liberated. Where is the need to label it in the absence of consciousness? The other day when I was contemplating the source is what I am. What I found myself writing is that the source is not awakened. You know, awakening is a term we use from our point of view. But the source is not awakened. It is just the truth. You know, it just is what it is. And that's kind of what Nisargadatta is saying, you know, the source isn't going to call itself liberated. You know, it just is what it is. That's really all you can say about it. I remember when I was reading Disappearance of the Universe by Gary Renard way back in 2004, I think. Maybe it was 2005. It was a long time ago. I think it was 2004. And there was this point where Art Nerpursa said to him, you know, you say the words God is, and then you cease to speak. I think I'm coming very, very closely to understanding what those words mean. That's why I say, you know, the absolute just is what it is. That's really all you can say about it. You certainly can't call it liberated or awakened. It's just what it is and what it's always been and what it always will be. Let's start the January 8th message. Nisargadatta says, outwardly, you can imitate a Yanani, but the Yanani has no fear. So outwardly, you can imitate an enlightened person, but an enlightened person has no fear. I guess that's how we know whether we really are enlightened or not, is do we experience any fear at all about anything? The questioner says, is he the ultimate? Nisargadatta says, the ultimate state is that state in which there is a total end to this body, name, and form. When there is no form, shape, color, or name, who is there to ask anything? Whatever happens, you accept it based on your identity with the body. And the body is time-bound. The questioner says, I have experienced that it is not being. Nisargadatta says, what do you understand by the experience? What is the significance of the experience? The questioner says, it is not an experience of any body. Nisargadatta says, any experience occurs where there is a change. If there is no change, there can be no experience. Not quite following the conversation, to be absolutely honest, but I do understand this last comment that Nisargadatta is making. This is something that I realized many years ago, back when I was still in North Carolina. You know, even though we use words like the direct experience of the absolute, that's just because, you know, we have limited words to work with. The truth is, experience is something that has change in it. Like, I can experience noise compared to quiet. I can experience cold compared to hot. I can experience happy compared to sad. But when it's an absolutely changeless, nothing to compare it to, there is no experience. And we don't have a word for that. So the funny thing is, we call that direct experience, the direct experience of the absolute, the direct experience of the unaffected. But every now and then you'll hear somebody call it a non-experience. And the reason they call it a non-experience is there is no change in it to register an experience. So again, I'm not following the conversation, but I do understand what Nisargadatta just said. Any experience occurs where there is a change. If there is no change, there can be no experience. And I guess he's saying this because the questioner, you know, is saying, I understand the experience of not being anybody, not being a person. I understand that experience. And Nisargadatta is saying, how can that be an experience? You know, if you understood yourself as the source, if you understood yourself as the unaffected, that is not an experience because it's changeless. The questioner is not arguing with him. The questioner says it is not an experience. It is a state of being, non-being. Right? It's a state of being, non-being. Nisargadatta says, that which you say is and is not. Is it according to words or is it an experience? I will not play hide and seek with words. That which you are describing, is it an experience or just the words? It is likely you have been influenced by what you have read and heard, and therefore what you are saying is only what you have heard. Is that right? Or is what you are saying a practical experience which you have had? It's kind of funny, because just a second ago, it was almost as if Nisargadatta, you know, kind of chewed him out or teased him, one or the other. Because he said he had the experience of being not being. And Nisargadatta is like, that's not an experience. It's, you know, you can't have an experience. And now Nisargadatta is asking, have you had that experience or not? So again, this shows that our words are very limiting. And the question says, I said before, it is not anybody's experience. I don't know. It sounds like they're kind of arguing with each other a little bit, one-upping each other a little bit. We'll see where this goes. Nisargadatta says, first, I thought I was the body. Then I experienced that I was not the body, but I was consciousness. It sounds a little bit like what I said just a few minutes ago. Then I got the experience that this consciousness is not really me. This is what I said just a little bit ago. Is he copying me? And there is no form, no individuality, no nothing. Is that your experience? And I want to say that is not my experience. My experience is that this contemplation is happening. And this realization is happening. And this acceptance of truth as truth is happening. But if I was to say that I have no experience of a body, I'd be lying. I mean, right now, I think this body might be catching a cold, and I experience that. Right? I feel the chills. I was coughing just before you gave me the mic. It's just, and I don't know how to describe this, it's just that I'm contemplating the truth as the truth so deeply. And I'm even rather amazed. At this point of acceptance that I have reached. Because I understand how deeply the mind doesn't want to accept the truth. And so to see this acceptance happening, in spite of the mind, you know, this is the last thing the mind wants to accept, it's amazing. And I think I trust that this contemplation is leading to the direct experience of the absolute. You know, I don't know if that will be soon or what we would call 20 years from now. I mean, I don't know that. But I trust that it's leading in that direction. Because why else would it be happening in the way that it is? You know, why else would it just be happening? But if he was to ask me, well, if he was to ask me either of these questions, if he was to ask me, first of all, am I just bullshitting with my mouth? Oh, pardon me, Don. I'd say, no, I'm not. There's a contemplation happening here. But if he then asked me, do you have the experience of no form, no individuality, no nothing? I'd have to say, no, not that either. Right? No, not that either. You know, there's a contemplation happening here. The questioner says, the experience is that there is no body, nothing, that I am and I am not. Nisargadatta says, what is it that is no longer there? The questioner says, the consciousness of the body. Now there is no more center. Thoughts don't come from the center as a body. Nisargadatta says, if thoughts don't come from your center as an individual body, then how do the thoughts come? Do you now identify yourself with the thoughts? Do you think the meaning of the thoughts and you are one and the same? The questioner says, no. Nisargadatta says, what has really transpired? What is the change? The questioner says, the change that the center in consciousness, which was there, is gone. The center, I am, is gone. Now that sounds like something Bernadette Roberts would say. So maybe Nisargadatta is talking to someone who's having a genuine experience, right? And it sounds like Nisargadatta isn't challenging him anymore. He's just asking questions. So maybe Nisargadatta is beginning to accept that too. That in front of him is someone who's having this genuine experience. Nisargadatta says, tell me something about that center, and that would be the I am that is gone. The questioner says, first there was a center of identification in the body, and now I don't feel that. Now there is no borderline. Now there is no particular entity. Nisargadatta says, I am means the knowledge you are. The questioner says, that is now unlimited. Nisargadatta says, the knowledge I am has no limitation at all. And the questioner says, that's right. Thank you. Now I must go. And I don't know if he leaves the room, but we do not see him again. We see Nisargadatta talking about him. And Nisargadatta says, when he talks saying, I am doing this or I am doing that, what he means is, I am that knowledge I am. That is consciousness. Because unless the consciousness is there, the body is not. In deep sleep, we are not aware of the body. We are aware of the body only when we are awake and the consciousness is there. Therefore, when I say this, I mean that it is the consciousness which I am and not the body, which comes later. This sickness, and I assume he's talking about his cancer, this sickness is an aspect of the consciousness. And I am not the consciousness. I am not the I amness. Whatever sickness is there is in the domain of consciousness. With the aid of consciousness, sickness is being experienced. When I shall be totally in my ultimate state, when this consciousness is finally extinguished, that is my total perfect state. When will I have no experience of this illness? Just as the sun sets, only when this consciousness sets will there be perfect health or no experience of the sickness. So long as the consciousness is there, the sickness must be experienced. What is my pleasure or happiness? Nothing other than this knowledge. I am this consciousness. Your idea of knowledge is something you can catch hold of, something you can feel and put in your pocket. This knowledge is not of that kind. When I know that I am knowledge itself, when, what can I hope to get? So that's kind of interesting. Nisargadatta is not here to defend himself against my inappropriate interpretation of what he just said. But what I feel like I heard him just say maybe is that still this awakening, what we call awakening, is not complete in him because he's still experiencing the sickness. It's kind of funny because I've thought other times I've heard him say other things. But I guess it doesn't really matter. How awake Nisargadatta was. What matters for each of us is that we continue walking the path that we're on and to see where it takes us. And I guess that's where I'll need to close. So thank you guys for coming, and I'll see you around.